ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrata. Today's text number 15. So word meanings Isha Abhishrishtam, created or given by, he certainly... Avarundamahe, we have to accept. Anga, my dear Priyavrata. Dukam, distress. Sukam, happiness. Va, or guna karma, with quality and work. Sangat, by association. Astaya, being situated in, tat-tat, that condition, yet, which body, ayunkta, he gave, nata, the Supreme Lord, chakshushmata, by a person having eyes, anda, blind men, eva, like, niyamana, being conducted. Isha Abhishrishtam Hyavarun Mahenga Dukam Sukam Va Guna Karma Sangat Astaya Tat Tad Yara Yungtanatas Chachus matang da iva niyamana. So translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear Priyavrata, according to our association with different modes of material nature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives us our specific bodies and the happiness and distress we achieve. One must therefore remain situated as he is and be conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exactly as a blind man is led by a person who has eyes with which to see. Purport. By material means, one cannot avoid the happiness and distress unique to his particular body. There are 8,400,000 bodily forms, and each destined to enjoy and suffer a certain amount of happiness and distress. This we cannot change, for the happiness and distress are ordained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in accordance with whose direction we receive our bodies. Since we cannot avoid the plan of the Supreme Godhead, we must agree to be directed by Him, just as a blind man is led by a person who has eyes. Under any circumstances, if we remain in the condition allotted to us by the Supreme Lord and follow His instructions, we will become perfect. The main purpose of life is to follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is such instructions that constitutes one's religion or occupational duty. In Bhagavad Gita, therefore, Lord Krishna says, Sarva dharmam parichaya mam ekam saranam braja. Give up all other engagements. Simply surrender unto me and follow me. Bhagavad Gita 1866. This process of surrendering by following the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not meant for any particular caste or creed. A Brahmin can surrender, and so can a Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra. Everyone can adopt this process. As stated in this verse, Chakshushamatanda Iva Niyamana, one should follow the Lord the way a blind man follows a person who has eyes. If we follow the Supreme Personality of Godhead by following the directions he gives in the Vedas and the Bhagavad Gita, our lives will be successful. The Lord therefore says, Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evaishasi satyam te prati jane priyosime. Always think of me, become my devotee, and offer respect and obeisances unto me. Then you will certainly come back home, back to Godhead. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Bhagavad Gita 1865. This instruction is meant for everyone, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra. If anyone from any division of life surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and follows his instructions, his life will be successful. The previous verse, has given the analogy of bulls moving under the direction of the driver of a bullock cart. The bulls, being completely surrendered to the driver, remain wherever he wants to place them and eat whatever he wants them to eat. Similarly, being completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we should not aspire for happiness or regret distress. We must be satisfied with the position allotted to us by the Lord. We should follow the path of devotional service and not be dissatisfied with the happiness and distress he has given. People in the material modes of nature and ignorance, of passion and ignorance, generally cannot understand the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with its 8,400,000 forms of life. But the human form affords one the special privilege to understand this plan, engage in devotional service, and elevate oneself to the highest position of perfection by following the Lord's instructions. The entire world is working under the influence of the modes of material nature, especially ignorance and passion. But if people engage in hearing and chanting about the glories of the Supreme Lord, their lives can be successful, and they can be elevated to the highest perfection. In the Brihad Naradiya Purana, therefore, it is said, Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Harir Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatir Anyata. In this age of Kali, there is no other way, no other way, no other way for spiritual perfection than the holy name, the holy name, the holy name of the Lord. Everyone should be given the chance to hear the holy names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for thus one will gradually come to understand his real position in life and be elevated to the transcendental position above the modes of goodness. Thus all impediments to his progress will be cut to pieces. In conclusion, therefore, we must be satisfied with whatever position we have been put into by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we should try to engage ourselves in his devotional service. Then our lives will be successful. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I chant that little prayer, Om Ajnana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I chant that prayer every time that I have the opportunity to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's interesting because that prayer is describing how the spiritual master forces open our eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Otherwise, we're blind. And that's exactly the subject matter of today's verse, that we're blind in our material condition in life, and therefore we should follow someone who has eyes. So the Guru has eyes, and we should follow the Guru. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has eyes. We should follow the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if we do that, we will be led on the right path. Unfortunately, it's a little hard to do that. And it's hard to do it because of our material experience. Just think of the two examples given in yesterday's verse and in today's verse. Yesterday, it talked about how we should be like a bull. And the bull is placed here by its driver, its master. It's placed there by its driver. It has no independence. It's just led here and there. And here, the blind person, helpless blind person, is just led here and there by someone with eyesight. But what's our experience of these two things in this material world? I don't have that much experience living in the countryside or with bulls and things like that. But I do go to India. And in India, you see that quite often. Now, I wouldn't want to be one of those bulls in India. Have you noticed how they treat the bulls, the bullock driver? He's like beating the bull, you know. He's beating him to go this way, beating him to go that way. It's not a very attractive kind of situation to be in. You know, we're advised by the Bhagavatam here to be like that bull and just, you know, accept. But who wants to be beaten to do this and that? That's what happens to the bull. And what about the blind person? My father-in-law in Delhi, he's a retired Indian diplomat. And when he retired, he thought, well, I don't want to just do nothing, sit at home. So let me do some service, some like welfare service. And so he started volunteering, being a teacher in a school for blind children in New Delhi. And so we were visiting him one time, and he said, well, let me take you to the school where I volunteer. Where all these, it was a boarding school, all the blind children were there. And so that was a big culture shock to go and see that school for the blind. I mean, it was a good thing they were blind. If they had to see what, you know, their surroundings, they may not have been so satisfied with it. It was, you know, not very good surroundings. And also, people with physical handicaps, they're often also abused. Where I live in Florida, in the United States, it's a warm climate, it's a good climate, and many people retire there, especially old people, they retire there. So there's a large population of older people in that state. And there are many nursing homes. And one of the biggest professions in Florida is for lawyers who do nursing home abuse. Because all these old people come there and they're like different ways, just like a blind person. Maybe they're not blind, maybe some are, but they're in a situation where they're in a dependent situation. And what does that dependent situation get them? It gets them abuse from those around them. It gets them abuse. And so again, another analogy here that is not so inviting, you know, to want to be like, you know, just to follow someone as if blind. But that's our material experience. That's our material experience. In spiritual life, we have to move beyond that. Therefore, first thing is to accept a guru. Accept a guru who can open your eyes. Not only will the guru guide you, he'll take you by the hand and guide you. But he'll actually open your eyes also. He'll actually open your eyes. By doing that act of faith, you're a blind man. By exercising the faith of accepting the hand of the guru, not only do you get guidance, but a miracle happens. Om agyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Your eyes become forced open, and you can see. It's very similar to that analogy that's given about the boat for crossing the ocean of material existence. That boat's also the guru. Mm-hmm. At least the guru is the captain of that boat. So that boat is on the shore of a vast ocean. And you're told to get in that boat and sail across that vast ocean. But a miracle happens. Once you accept that and step onto the boat, what happens to the ocean of material existence? It shrinks up to the size of the calf's footprint. It sinks up. And so all these miracles happen when we exercise that faith. And therefore, we can be like that bull and place our full faith in the driver of the bullock cart and know that he won't just slap us this way and that way, that he'll actually provide us care. We know that we can take the hand of a person with their eyes opened and not worry about being abused if we have faith. Now, why should we have that faith? Why should we have that faith? Well, if we read these verses very carefully, we can see why we should have that faith. Because these verses also describe the Supreme Lord. In today's verse, for instance, it says that patastatad yada yungta natas. So in the word for word, nata is translated the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord. Well, that may not be enough. So how does this word nata actually describe the Supreme Lord? Nata, when we translate it, the Supreme Lord, that gives us the position. But if we understand the Sanskrit language a little bit and try to understand how that is benefiting us here, why is this nata used here? Why not some other word? Why not Bhagavan? Bhagavan also means the Supreme Lord. What other words are there for the Supreme Lord? Ishvara is another one, yeah. Brahman, yes. All these are could be translated to the Supreme Lord, but why nata is used here? What does nata mean, anybody? Controller, yes. Master. Something more. It means protector. It means protector. So if we understand that what's being described here is that place your faith in the Supreme Lord who is your protector, then all of these fears about being exploited, about being misled, they disappear. Because we understand that we're not just being told to do this blindly without getting any description of who is going to lead us. Who is that person that's going to take our hand and lead us, you know, in our blind condition? It's not the, it's our protector. It's our protector, the Supreme Lord. Actually, you're very fortunate here in Radhadesh because you worship Shri Radha Gopinath. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has a bhajan called Gopinath. And that bhajan describes the same thing that this verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam describes. It describes how one, in the distress of material existence, can find some shelter, some refuge, some protection. And he finds it in Gopinath. It's a very long bhajan, but I did want to read a few of the translations to this bhajan, just to give us some idea of who this Natha is that we're asked to surrender to. O Gopinath, Lord of the Gopis, please hear my request. I am a wicked materialist, always addicted to worldly desires, and no good qualities do I possess. O Gopinath, you are my only hope, and therefore I have taken shelter at your lotus feet. I am your eternal servant. That's the idea of refuge. I looked it up, actually. Not that I know these things so much, but I just looked up. I mean, it's amazing what you can find on the internet. I went on the internet and put Natha defined. Natha defined. And you put it in there, and it comes up. Here's a Sanskrit definition. It even has some Devanagari in there and everything. Wow. So, you know, you can find anything, you know, so quickly. And they had three definitions. It means Lord, Protector, and Refuge. So refuge is here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying, you're my only hope, and therefore I have taken shelter at your lotus feet. O Gopinath, you are the ocean of mercy. Having come into this phenomenal world, you expand your divine pastimes for the sake of the fallen souls. O Gopinath, please remove the torment of worldly existence. I can no longer tolerate the pain of ignorance and a repeated succession of birth and death. O Gopinath, you know everything. Now, having punished your servant, please give him a place at your lotus feet. Final verse of this bhajan. O Gopinath, the noose of materialism has become fixed around my neck. Taking up the sword of your mercy and cutting this bondage, make this Bhaktivinoda your humble servant. So this idea is there. Not that we surrender ourselves blindly, not knowing to whom we surrender or what that person's motive is or what their capability of protecting us is. No, that's all given. Full knowledge is given. Full knowledge is given so that you can, with faith and with the simplicity that comes from being in a dependent position, just surrender to the Supreme Lord. And why not? What's the alternative? Well, the alternative is presented in this verse. And we're talking about this in our class this week in ethics in the college. The alternative is to struggle for happiness, the struggle for happiness, and to try to avoid distress. If we don't have this simple surrender, if we don't do this simple surrender, just take my hand and lead me, then the alternative to that is to struggle hard for happiness. And so one of the things we are discussing, and we're going to discuss today also for students in the class, is this idea of happiness. Can anybody tell me what happiness is? Anybody has any idea? What is happiness? A state of mind. Unfortunately, the mind is very flickering. So if it's a state of mind, then it's not going to last very long. A specific state of mind. Okay. On what? I mean, what is... It's just... What is the mind thinking about that is fixed on as a state? Free of conflicts, satisfied. Okay. That's good. Yes, yes. Ah, the absence of distress. So happiness is just the absence of distress. That doesn't sound very like positive or something like that. I think that's good. You know, both of what you said is good. What is it? I mean, joyfulness, pleasure. Let's do pleasure because that might be easier. Then we'll come back to joyfulness. Pleasure. Is it? You mean sense pleasure? We know from Bhagavad Gita, also from our experience, that sense pleasure is also fleeting. You know, like it's here now and it's gone there. So I guess that's why there's a struggle for happiness, to keep that pleasure constant, because it goes away and we have to keep getting it back. Wait a minute. Getting it back. So pleasure, joyfulness. Joyfulness. But joyfulness also doesn't last, does it? It's joyfulness. That's a step up from just being devoid of, just trying to not have distress. It's a positive thing, joyfulness, but it also doesn't last. And there's a struggle to get it. Doesn't it seem, shouldn't happiness be something that's natural? Why do we have to really endeavor for happiness? It should be natural, but we have to endeavor for it in so many ways. So materially speaking, happiness is, it's hard to define. It's, if you find it, it's hard to keep constant. And we always have to ward off the miseries that are sort of competing with it. That's material happiness. Spiritual happiness is something different. Spiritual happiness is a lot easier, really. I mean, what is spiritual happiness? I think we can even define spiritual happiness more easily than the material happiness. Yeah. Right. Pleasing the Lord. That's not so hard to understand. Pleasing the Lord. Well, he says, like Prabhupada quotes in the verse, manmana bhava mad bhakto majaji mam namaskaru. You want to please the Lord? All you have to do is offer your obeisances right here. Here's the Lord. Just offer your obeisances. That pleases the Lord. And if you do this constantly, if you're constantly offering your obeisances to the Lord, you're constantly serving the Lord, then that is a practical application of happiness. It's not an abstract concept or a result of something that you do or that you don't do. It's a practical concept. It's a practical activity, pleasing the Lord, and becoming happy that way is a practical activity. So we should do that. Our lives should be dedicated that way. And indeed, the Bhagavatam tells us, doesn't it, in the first canto, what is that verse? Satatam kintiyato mam yajantascha. It says that by constant remembrance and chanting of the names of the Lord, that one becomes happy. Something, I can't remember the exact verse right now. Or maybe it's a combination of verses, because so many verses are there that come to that same conclusion. That if you give uninterrupted, that's the verse, the uninterrupted and unmotivated service to the Supreme Lord, Savai punsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir hokshaje ahaituki apati yata ye atma supersediti. As long as your service is uninterrupted and unmotivated, then you can get this complete satisfaction. So that is worth striving for, rather than the temporary fleeting pleasures of this material world. They're not worth striving for, because even if they're achieved, they are just like the will of the wisp, Prabhupada says. They disappear very quickly. They're not substantial. But spiritual happiness is a different experience. And so that should be strived for. But the wonderful thing about it is that, as described in this verse, we don't even really have to strive for it. We just have to be dependent and place our faith in the hand of Krishna and his representative, and they'll guide us to what is happiness. They'll guide us to all perfection in life. We can't change that anyway, and that's the point here. This section of the Bhagavatam, we find this is Lord Brahma speaking to Maharaj Priyavrata. Maharaj Priyavrata was endeavoring for happiness by performing bhakti yoga as a brahmachari, away from society, solitarily meditating upon the Supreme Lord. But there were some duties awaiting him, and he didn't want to take them up. And no one could convince him to take them up. Finally, Lord Brahma had to come, and this is one of the arguments he gave to him, that you're afraid that you will be put in a position of material opulence, material enjoyment, and that will divert you from your path. But he told him, you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry for two reasons. First reason is you're already fixed as a devotee of the Lord, and no matter what circumstance in life a devotee may find himself, if he is fixed in remembrance of the Lord with a desire to serve the Lord, then material circumstances cannot impede that devotion. Therefore, it doesn't matter whether you're a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. These are all material circumstances, and they won't impede our devotional service. They can't impede our devotional service. They're subservient to devotional service. But we have to be fixed. We have to be fixed in remembrance of the Supreme Lord. If we're not, then yes, we can become distracted. So in one sense, Priyavrata's fear of being distracted was good. It was healthy. And a healthy fear of Maya. But it wasn't a fear based on the unknown, or thinking somehow or another that these things were more powerful than the process of devotional service. So it was a different type of fear. It was a wise caution. But Lord Brahma is assuring him, don't worry, you're fixed, these things won't deviate you, and therefore take up your position as emperor of the entire universe. And so for us too, we shouldn't worry so much about where we're situated in the Varna or ashram systems. Be satisfied with where we are, and from there execute devotional service. This echoes a very famous instruction that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave all of us in his conversation with Srila Ramananda Rai. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was trying to elicit from Ramananda Rai what is the best activity that can be done, he asked him many questions, and Ramananda Rai gave many answers, but the Lord did not indicate any satisfaction until this point came up. Jnane parasam urapashyanamanta eva jivanti san mukaritam bhavadi avartam stane stita shutikatem manobir ye prayasho jita jitopi ais trilokyam. When Ramananda Roy said this verse, which is basically that you don't have to change your situation. Stane stita shutikatim tanuman vano bir. Just stay situated as you are. Engage yourself in hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord. And by doing so, you can conquer the unconquerable Lord. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a little satisfied. Yes, he accepted that. So the same instruction here. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. Just stay where you're situated, and from there, engage in the devotional service of the Lord, and you can become perfect. Prabhupada guarantees it. Prabhupada is leading us. He's the one whose hand we're taking. And he's telling us right here that if you do that, then you can become perfect. You can become perfect. So all the mystery is gone. All the fear of abuse is gone. The happiness is present. So what more could one want than to dive deeper and deeper into that condition of life? So these are some of the instructions we're getting from this verse and purport. Are there any comments or questions that anyone has at this point? Yes? Is it only for advanced persons that can have this type of consciousness and benefit? Well, no, I don't think it's only for the most advanced persons. Of course, we have to be advanced enough to accept this and to at least initially surrender. We have to be, and not everyone is ready to do that, and to at least initially surrender, or at least initially endeavor to keep Krishna constantly in our mind. But that's where there's a combination of our endeavor and the mercy of the Supreme Lord and his representatives. Supreme Lord sends his representative to the world, and then by engaging in the service of his representative, that's how we fix our mind. If I just take the example that was afforded to the world and me personally, in coming Krishna consciousness, fix my mind on Krishna, that's hard. But if there is an organization, if there's an institution that has a mission, and that mission requires so much practical work to get done, if I apply myself to that, if I apply my mind to that, my endeavors to that, that is, in my state, my neophyte state, equivalent to just being able to go and meditate on Krishna like Priyavrata was doing. He was away from all society, alone, just meditating, practicing bhakti yoga that way. Even for the beginner, though, they're engaged in rendering practical service, menial service even, to the guru. Therefore, the guru has a mission. That's his mercy. The guru's mission is his mercy because it gives us all a chance to engage in so many things that it practically need to get done to make that mission a success. And our absorption in that is purifying, and it helps us to come to the point of simply being Krishna Smaranam, remembering Krishna. So it's available to all, and it comes in a variety of forms depending on our level of advancement. Is it? Anything else? Anyone else? Yes? Well, I think that there are, by not, if he didn't follow, would that be sense gratification? Or let's say, would there have been some fault there that he was asked by Lord Brahma and he didn't do it? Would there have been some fault there? I think it's, and I'm trying to think of instances from the Shastra that sort of support the... the way I want to answer your question is that yes, they're being given mercy and then not accepting it, or thinking in ways in, about it that aren't in line with it, do appear. It does. My initial reaction to your question was yes, there would be some fault there for not taking the mercy, and whether that's based on sort of a misunderstanding of philosophy, or some kind of pride in one's position. There are a lot of reasons why one might hesitate to do that. Say, like a lot of times, a brahmachari, they may be a little proud, you know, I'm a brahmachari, you know, and they may be called upon to do different things, and they say, but wait a minute, I'm a brahmachari, you know. But that may not be the best thing in the service of the guru. If the guru is asking you, you know, do this, and you're refusing, you know, based on something, some position, some idea, a conception about yourself, other than just being a servant, then I think there's some fault there, yeah. I mean, there were instances where Prabhupada just basically instructed somebody, you know, you get married to this person, you know. And they could have said, well, I think Satrup Maharaj was like that, wasn't he? You know, Prabhupada just said, you marry this person or something like that. And he just did it. Not that, you know, not that he was thinking, well, I'm a brahmachari, why are you asking me to do that? You know. So just accept. I think that's what we have to do with the guru, just accept. Be ready to do that. Of course, that doesn't mean you can't talk. Can we talk about this? A little bit, you know. But ultimately, we have to accept. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I don't know. Bhakti. What is bhakti? And what is bhakti? Is bhakti is powerful? Is it powerful in ways beyond what the guru says or the guru's mercy? Bhakti is personal. I mean, it's not like there's bhakti out here, there's some energy, and then there's the guru, and one's powerful than the other. I mean, it's the person. That's what bhakti, but isn't it, Mars? I mean, am I right here? So I don't think that we can separate them like that. Yes? Okay. Yeah, I think there are two things. One thing is that if the guru gives you instruction and you have some doubt where you can do it, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it, you shouldn't try, you shouldn't endeavor. Because even if you fail, your attempt to try to execute is recognized by the guru. It's recognized by the guru. Well, you tried, you weren't successful. Bhakti is not dependent upon what we can perceive in terms of ordinary material success or failure. There may be a failure, but that failure may be the success. Because the success is attempting, trying to, desiring to serve the Lord and his devotees. So if we take that, even foolishly we take that, then we avail ourselves of the mercy of the Lord, and we may succeed where other people may not. Just like Prabhupada gave the example of shooting the rhinoceros. If you go hunting for a rhinoceros and you fail, who's going to criticize you? You know, you went shooting for the rhinoceros. You know, that's pretty bold. You know, oh, wow, it's no one cares whether you failed or not. But then if you succeed, you know, like, then that's glorious. And so the guru's order is like that. Of course, the guru's order also carries with it the capability to succeed. Even if we're not qualified in so many ways, if we endeavor, just like I was talking in the beginning about the oceans shrinking up, the guru opening one's eyes, these miracles happen because of our faith and our surrender. And so that should always be at the forefront. You know, how can I do what's being asked without worrying about success or failure? Because as is explained here, success or failure, happiness or distress, they're outside of our endeavor anyway. That's not in our hand. And so that shouldn't be a factor whether we do this or that. Even in one of our theories we're going to be studying today, success or failure or happiness or distress aren't reasons why one should act in a particular way. Okay. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, well, pure devotees are obviously receiving the shelter and protection of the Supreme Lord. But what a pure devotee does with that is that he turns around and tries to give that protection and shelter to others. And so we may not be able to claim that I'm pure and therefore I have the shelter of the Supreme Lord, the infallible shelter of the Supreme Lord. But we can take shelter of his devotees. We can take shelter of his devotees. And we can receive their mercy. And sometimes the devotees of the Lord are more merciful than the Lord by the Lord's own arrangement. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed this in his dealings with his servant that traveled with him to South India. What was his name? Kala Krishna Das. Kala Krishna Das left the shelter of the Supreme Lord when allured by the Bhattataris in South India. They allured him with women. So he left Lord Chaitanya and went with them. Lord Chaitanya came and grabbed him back. And then they came back to Puri. And then he said, take him away. He can no longer be with me. He fell victim to this Maya. But what happened was is that the devotees took pity on him for being rejected by the Lord. And they thought, well, let's send him to Bengal to tell the devotees Lord Chaitanya's come back from his tour to South India. And they asked Lord Chaitanya, can we give him this service? And he said, well, whatever you want. And so Kala Krishna Das, even though rejected by the Lord himself, he got the mercy of the devotees of the Lord and was able to engage in a service that was quite intimate, going and telling all the devotees that the Lord has come back from his South Indian journey. And in telling that pastime, it's often told in conjunction with a pastime of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his devotees, his disciples in Madras in South India, Chennai. There was a brahmachari at the Mott there. And he left, for some reason there was some controversy, he did something or whatever, and he left, it was a big thing, he left the Mott. He was like kicked out or something like that, of the temple. And when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came there, this brahmachari came back to him and said, look, I want to come back, I'm sorry, I made mistakes, I caused trouble. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, no, you cannot come back. And so naturally the brokenhearted devotee went away. But then after, just as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was leaving the Mott, he gave instruction to the devotees. After I'm gone, you go to him and tell him he can come back and he can render some service again. And they said, but Guru Maharaj, how can we do that? You rejected him like that. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told this pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about how the devotees of the Lord are more merciful than the Lord himself. And so that how his disciples should be more merciful than him and give him shelter. So the point is, that all that long story is that even though we're not pure completely and can't take complete shelter of the Supreme Lord or can't achieve the complete shelter of the Supreme Lord, still he makes provision for us through his devotees. And so ISKCON is a society of devotees started by Srila Prabhupada. And we may not want to take that on the basis of like sort of the legal institution or whatever, but it's a society where there are devotees. And if we can get the mercy of those devotees, we can get the mercy of those devotees. And we should strive for that, and because by getting that, then eventually we'll qualify ourselves to get the mercy of Krishna. So therefore the association of devotees is so valuable. And we should never neglect it. Is this clock actually right on here? Oh, it is. Yes. Well, contradictory instructions. Well, I think that, again, the beauty of the association of devotees and the sangha of devotees, many devotees, is that you can always inquire from others, inquire from senior devotees. How is this conflicting instructions to be resolved? How is this to be understood? And keeping an open mind and keeping an open heart. And if we do that, then I think we can get instructions. But when we become set in our mind and in our heart on a particular thing, then it's hard for even the most advanced devotee to convince us otherwise, or to change our mind otherwise, or to resolve any conflict that's in our mind. Because we're thinking, well, I know what the answer is. I'm going asking for answers, but I already know what the answer is. And so when I hear something, that's not the answer. Because I know what the answer is already, and what you're saying is not what I know. So we can't be helped. Therefore, it's advised that we always have to be humble. That's the first symptom of knowledge as described in Bhagavad Gita, is that we have to be humble. And when we're humble, that means we're not fixed in thinking that I know already, but that I can learn. And when we're thinking I can learn, then we'll find resolution to whatever difficulty in devotional service we have. Because It's not that the Lord is absent in our lives. He's not, the, as explained here. Some of the definitions given in the beginning, I asked for not, and people said Ishvara, a Brahman. These are definitions of Nata that mean that he's omniscient, he's all-knowing, nothing escapes him, in addition to being our protector. So he knows what's going on. He knows how to benefit us. He knows. And if we let him, then he'll give us that mercy in one way or another, either directly or indirectly. There are instances where the Lord directly speaks to devotees. There are instances where he arranges things to happen in one's life that one can see the hand of the Lord acting, and then you know. But you have to be open to it. You have to have your eyes open. Just like in our class, we're talking about seeing ethical issues. Well, it takes some preparation. You know, you had to figure out, well, okay, well, now I can see ethical issues. You study the Bhagavatam, you associate with devotees, and then you can start seeing the hand of the Lord. It's not a mystery. It's not a mystery. It's the hand of the Lord. You can see it. So, is that okay? So I think we should end there. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam.